Welcome everyone to Screenfish Radio. I'm so glad you made the time for us as we talk about No Time to Die. This week, we are so excited to have an incredible panel of Bond experts or villains, depending on who you ask. And I am really excited to have back Dave Voigt, the creator of InTheSeats.ca. Welcome back, Dave.
Well, thanks for having me as always, buddy.
Always love having you on. And a couple of newbies, if you will, to Screenfish Radio. I'm so excited this week to welcome Tom Ernst. He is the former host of SNAM and is a writer with Original Sin and Northern Stars. He also has a podcast called Rewind and Fast Forward. Welcome, Tom. So glad you could join
us. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm glad you're here.
I follow Dave Voigt wherever he goes. That's really the secret to anyone's success.
I was ringing the bell, and we got people to show up today. So
it's true. And last but not least, to the one who answered the call to that bell is Tim Rideout, the creator of the Mind Reels. So thanks for joining us, Tim.
Oh, dude, my pleasure. Anytime anybody wants to talk 007, I am there.
Well, that
and Dave's totally right. I came in on Dave's coattails. He was like, "This is the guy. Let's talk."
Bring out your dead. Bring out your dead.
That's going to be the new intro to my podcast forever now. you cannot go wrong with a little Python to start your day. So. No Time to Die is the final Daniel Craig entry into the James Bond canon, where James Bond is enjoying a tranquil life in Jamaica after leaving active service. However, his peace is short-lived as his old friend from the CIA, Felix Leiter, shows up and asks him for help. The mission to rescue a kidnapped scientist turns out to be far more treacherous than expected, leading Bond on the trail of a mysterious villain who's armed with a dangerous new technology. No Time to Die is directed by Cary Joji Fukunaga and stars, as I said, Daniel Craig, as well as Rami Malek, Lea Seydoux, and Naomi Harris. It is currently playing in theaters. As always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers. So just so you're aware, podcast plot points up for grabs. But guys, I would love to hear what you think of No Time to Die.
Who's jumping in first? Age before beauty, gentlemen. Please, go ahead.
Oh, I cover both of those areas. Wow, I am beautiful as well as the eldest here. So I don't know. I guess that makes me go first. I cover both of those. First of all, I just want to say, Mr. Rideout, it just occurred to me, the Mind Reels, what a great name. It just all of a sudden the pin dropped and I went, The Mind Reels. I get it. Okay. Very clever. Okay. The new James Bond, S for spoilers. So we can go anywhere here.
Yep.
I enjoyed this one and I think I enjoyed it more than most people that I've talked to and chatted with because there's a fragility to James that was harkened back, not quite as dark, but certainly harkened back to Craig's first Bond outing. Was that Skyfall?
Casino Royale.
Casino Royale.
Hmm. Okay, so it harkens back to his second Bond outing as in third, Skyfall.
Third one.
Holy shit. Listen, it's you who called me a Bond expert, not me. So, all right. Okay, let's go all the way back. Very dark in the first one. He's a killer, right? It's very dark. Go to Skyfall, and it's dark again. We have a traumatic past that he has to sort of come in grips with, which I thought was a really great place to take Bond. And I fully expected to see Skyfall in the lineup of Academy Awards, both for performance and I thought an outside chance for Best Picture. I thought it was a really strong Bond. This one, it sort of brings those elements in a little bit lighter, but we have James Bond making mistakes in this film. He makes emotional mistakes. He makes judgment mistakes time and time again. At least three times he makes critical mistakes. And I like that about this Bond. I also like that he was a little bit sort of weakened by love, as Bond was in Her Majesty's Secret Service. Yeah. And this just rang really authentic to me. I got tired of the Bond as superhero. I got tired of the Bond as womanizer. And this was a Bond I really liked. So saying that, this film gets a pretty high rating for me. Skyfall is still number one for me of all the Bonds. And then this one comes in about, I guess, fourth or fifth.
Now, you know what? Just to dovetail off that, Tom, because I mean, I love how you said just how he made mistakes. And I mean, and you're right. He is a fallible Bond. And I mean, I think Craig's Bond throughout all the five movies, he's probably been the Bond that we've been the most emotionally invested with. I mean, from the scene in Casino Royale when he sits in the shower with Vesper after brutally murdering those guys, and then as the character evolves, and as we see here, he's really sort of getting emotionally involved, and he's invested in these people, and we're invested in the characters. And I mean, we've all talked about this separately off air, but I'm with you, Tom, that like I definitely think Skyfall is probably the best out of the Craig canon. But for me, I'm putting this like sort of right behind there because it's such a fantastic ending, and it really gives closure to this character that, quite frankly, in the history of Bond, I think is the first time we've actually given a damn about James Bond, the person.
Yeah.
Well, and you're totally right there, because for the first time we've had a character arc. Most of the time Bond, like take Connery or Moore, they're just reflections of the time and the thought behind it. Whereas now they've developed this mythology, this arc, this story for all of them. That never existed before, because any of the other Bonds, you can kind of just plug and play and just pop in and out. But if you go from Casino Royale through Quantum of Solace, through Skyfall, through Spectre to No Time to Die, there is a through line for the character, which hasn't happened for the series before. There's an actual development to his character. So you feel for him this time.
It's interesting because I would say with Brosnan, they tried. But I mean, in the 90s, it was loose at best. Like, look at most franchises, even the Batman franchises, they would say that they were technically building on the last one, but it was very, very wafer thin. And I remember when World Is Not Enough came out, and they were like, Bond is, he's never killed a woman. And it was like, this was a grand moment for the franchise, which, you know, 20 years later, after Me Too and all these things, it's sort of like, yeah, that was the big victory, was it?
Right.
Wonderful. But I love what you're saying. This film, although I don't think it was necessarily planned as a five film arc,
no,
feels like a five film arc.
Yeah.
And that is something that I think is truly unique to Craig's Bond. And I think it's a reflection of the time. This is what people are looking for, is more of a through line story, I think, as well. What else do you think? What do you think Craig, we've already sort of talked about it, but Craig's Bond, what do you think he contributed to the canon?
I think he brought a lot of Ian Fleming's original character back to the story, where he's a little more hard-edged. He's got his vices. He knows he's a killer, and he knows he's good at it and does his job, but he's still a human side. One of the moments I pointed out to my partner was, this is the first time we actually see Bond cook. I mean, and in the original novels, he likes food. He likes to cook. He likes to, you know, he has his housekeeper May, who will come in and make meat meals for him. And he knows what he likes, and he knows how he likes his eggs done and all this stuff. So there were little moments throughout No Time to Die that I'm like, oh, that's a real nice kind of callback to like the novels and the actual literary canon. So to give Craig the chance to do that was just kind of cool. So, and I just wandered away from the question on my own little foray there. So.
But now I have to watch the film again. I certainly don't remember him cooking. I remember Q trying to cook.
Yeah, he made breakfast for the little girl.
He did. That's right.
How sweet.
And she didn't like it.
That's right.
And I mean, you know, the other side of this whole Craig arc with Bond, it made it like he was human. Mm-hmm. Like Daniel Craig's Bond got his ass kicked repeatedly and often. I mean, even when you think back to that moment in Skyfall when he shot and sort of adjusts his collar jumping off the crane, you know, it's like, okay, like in other Bond movies, he wouldn't be bleeding if that had happened. But I mean, from every single one of these films, Bond was not Superman. Bond nope. was just this guy who would go above and beyond. And I mean, I think that's what brought him down to earth and made him this really sort of, again, almost likable character, especially towards the end of the sort of the arc of the films. And I mean, particularly in this one, like we empathize with his journey, especially as he's, you know, falling out of cars and getting hit by cars and doing God knows what else, you know?
You yeah. say almost likable. I thought we liked James Bond.
Well,
I thought
that what I mean.
The great question.
He is like, he is one of, like, you're not supposed to like him, but you like him.
Oh, this is new to me.
I didn't know that.
Realistically,
well, I'm always rooting for the wrong guy. Then that's actually right. I mean,
really like Connery? Did we ever really like Moore or Brosnan? They were always sort of these archetypes and just reflections, the pompous reflections of their time.
Well, I think as critics, maybe we didn't like them, but I think as audience members. We were eating them up, sort of like just loving what they were doing. Moore in particular, who was whose whole gig was to be an audience pleaser, and I don't criticize Moore for that. I criticize the writing, etc. Those were the worst Bonds, I think, but there were also the ones I grew up on. But yeah, no, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying it's a perspective I've not taken or even acknowledged before. Certainly if you ask my daughter, who's 14, and when I first showed her, I think it was Dr. No.
Oh dear.
She was there when the old lady came out of the toll booth and started mowing people down. She loved that. But as soon as Bond grabbed a woman and she said no, so he grabbed her harder and kissed her, she jumped out of her seat. She was probably about 8 then, jumped out of her chair and yelled in front of the entire audience, "You're not a good man. That's illegal. You're a bad guy. You're no hero." And she has refused to watch Bond ever since. She would agree with you. Bond is unlikable.
See, and I think, I think now maybe we're wise enough to say how unlikable he is. Like, I didn't grow up with Connery and Moore per se. I grew up with Dalton and really Brosnan was the first time I really cared about Bond when Goldeneye came out. But I always liked Connery. But the films themselves were just, you know, hyper masculine male fantasies, if you will on that, which is one of the things I love about Craig's Bond, is that the films, Bond didn't just grow, the films grew, the world changed around him. Like, I think Brosnan at the time, if I'm misspeaking, I might be, but was seen as more progressive than the other Bonds. And he was the same type of character and the world was the same sort of thing. He was just a bit nicer about it. You know what I mean? But the toxicity was still there. And with Craig, one of the things I found particularly interesting, especially with the last one, which was Spectre, I felt like in Spectre, they were really trying to steer it back to, hey, you know, not just with the name Spectre, but the style of story. They're trying to push it back to the old type of Bond. We gave you a new Bond. We're going to give you an older Bond. And it doesn't work. They made him tell more jokes. They made him be a little colder and more aggressive. And it doesn't work in the same way that it does in Casino Royale. I love that M just calls him a blunt instrument. And talk about the blunt instrument to the guy who is talking about how he sees, or that his daughter has her eyes, and how he knew that. And there's a sensitivity about him. Like, that's an arc. That's change.
Mm.
I find that particularly interesting in so many ways. Like, I do like the old Bonds. I do. I don't the newer ones as much. I admit it. I just...
No. But I could, I have limited times that I really need to see Sean Connery in a terry cloth shorts and beach shirt. I find... But you know what? I don't know. I don't know if I would credit Bond himself for changing with the times. I think the times forced Bond's hand. I don't think we could have released a Bond as he was, and have people buy into it. I think they needed to update it, and I think that's the same way with you look like at that's why we don't have any more Dirty Harry movies, right? Yeah. They just don't fly. You were talking about Bond kills, first time Bond kills a woman. I'll never forget how the audience cheered. This isn't a Bond movie, at a Dirty Harry movie, when he's on a train with this woman and her dudes are trying to beat up Dirty Harry. He gets the best of them. And then she says, "You wouldn't punch a lady." And he says, "You're no lady," and decks her. And the audience erupts, right?
Yeah.
These things just don't fly anymore. I don't think they can. I don't think they hit the sort of collective unconsciousness of the public like it used to.
No, but you know what? I mean, I think that just goes back to why Skyfall was such a pivotal moment in the Bond canon. Because I mean, I remember seeing that movie. Because I mean, there was a press screening that we all saw, and then I went like a second time with some friends, and people were going, "Oh, where was the Bond girl? Where was the Bond girl?" I'm like, guys, M was the Bond girl.
Yeah.
This was the story of him going home to mother and him going back home and sort of protecting his family and protecting his roots and trying to sort of be a better person than he was.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's where the character really did shift. I mean, we saw glimpses of it in the first two Craig Bonds with him sort of being this very... more of a human, like very fallible, very sort of gettable kind of character. But I mean, in Skyfall, we saw him take real hits, which was obviously the death of M.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were so many things I thought were so different. And I personally, I think they were wonderful, but I'm like, I kind of had to laugh to myself because I'm like, yeah, okay. Bond he's monogamous, and I know it's not for the first time in the canon, but the only woman that he's intimate with is Lea Seydoux's character. He's not bouncing around, he's not sleeping around. Even Ana de Armas basically high fives him at the end and they go their separate ways, and I thought this is remarkable. There's no tension. I thought, okay, well, you know, at one point in the film, I thought, okay, Lea Seydoux is going to die, which I can't. I only say her. What was her character's name again? Madeline. Madeline Swann's going to die.
Right.
And there'll be some moment with him and the new 007, probably, or something. But no, it's just strictly like that aspect of the character, which was a staple of Bond, especially for 20 films.
Yeah.
Has matured into a much healthier landscape. I thought that was really, really fascinating.
And they even reference it and disarm it when they're in the broom closet together and she's saying, "Get undressed." And he's like, "Shouldn't we have a drink first?" It's like, "No, put on the tux."
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all those things have been sort of hit. I'm speaking a lot, and Tim, I'm going to allow you. I've been jumping all over you, but I wanted to say two things that they were fast on my mind, and that one of the is the shot, the sort of her dethroning of Bond as the womanizer, is the shot of Bond walking out of the ocean, and then whatever Bond movie that was,
Casino Royale.
Casino Royale, and that was, you know, Honor Blackman, right?
Yep.
Many years earlier. And again, Halle Berry a few years after that. So he sort of took over that role, saying, "Here's one for the women." The other thing is, is the opening scene of the most No Time to Die. I thought, if you're going to talk about glass ceilings and the women's role in a society of glass ceilings that they have to break through, was there no better analogy than breaking through the glass ceiling than the opening of No Time to Die? The water, underneath the water, trying to break through the ice, assisted by the villain, but regardless, breaking through the ice, being pulled up through the glass ceiling. I thought there was no better analogy than that. Whether it was intentional or not, I don't know. But.
Well, yeah, and then if you're going to talk about intentional stuff, I got giddy through the entire movie. Anytime Hans Zimmer incorporated like John Barry's score from Her Majesty's Secret Service, as soon as that cue showed up, I'm like, okay, there's going to be a more personal story here. And we know we have all the time in the world, somebody's going to die. You just know that because that's what happened in Her Majesty's Secret Service. The other thing I got really giddy about, and it's, again, it's a literary reference to the Ian Fleming Bonds, was Rami Malek's Poison Garden was actually featured in the novel You Only Live Twice, which was also set on an island in Japan, but wasn't a big secret island like the Sean Connery film. So all these little nods to both the films originally, plus the literary canon. I got giddy the entire way through the film. I was just wowed. So I'm not sure I can speak as fluently as some of you guys are doing. I'm feeling a little out of my depth, but I'm just like, if we want to talk Bond, let's go, baby.
Well, yeah, you just confirmed yourself as a Bond fan to pick up on a Hans Zimmer score. While I was watching the film, I thought, when you saw Madeline lying the next day in bed with the sheets covered over, that was Goldfinger asphyxiated body. The fortress, the island fortress, was the man with the golden gun. And even the way Christoph Waltz is presented only harkens back to when Javier Bardem was the villain, but it's the same entrance, you know? Right.
And the Aston Martin, of course, both of them.
Well, of course.
My
father-in-law drove an Aston Martin. That's my little, I know, that was why I married his daughter.
That's fair, I guess.
I have to say, with all the nods to previous Bond films that we saw, I was thrilled. I mean, I heard rumors back when they were in production that Rami Malek was going to be Dr. No. And I was thrilled that they only reference it rather than come out and say it. Like, this guy is like, you know, with the island, it was nice to see a villain with a tropical island, you know, again, like that was harkening back the old days, but I was dreading them saying, you know, the problem is Spectre. I took them out because I am Dr. No. And I'm like, oh, I was nervous that was going to be the case.
I don't think audiences would fall for that anymore though. I mean, we saw like the thing I truly hated about Spectre was the Blofeld reveal. I thought that was just so moronic. I thought it spoke so badly about the series. I thought it played down to the audience. I thought it just treated everybody so badly to say, oh, they're brothers. Well, not brothers, but brothers. And I love the fact that No Time to Die addresses it, but then carries on. But yeah, you don't have to talk down to your audiences anymore, especially with action films. People expect more now.
Wait, you mean in a film called Spectre, you expected that the villain would be Blofeld?
Right? Who knew?
I don't know what you're talking about, Tim. I have right?
No clue. No, but I mean, you're right, Tim, because it's really interesting how the action film as a whole has gone really kind of split in two. It's either gone the Mission Impossible Bond way, or it's gone the let's launch a car into space Fast and Furious 9 kind of way. There's no in between anymore.
There's not. And they're both enjoyable, to be sure.
Well, you know, it's interesting you guys say that. One of the questions that I had, and I was thinking about with this one, time is a key theme throughout the whole film. It's in the title. So, but so is die. As I was joking with Tom earlier, die is in almost every Bond title, it feels like, anyway. But just the concept of time is very, very key, certainly with the wrapping up of Craig's arc and whatnot. But do you think that Bond himself, I'm not talking about Craig, but Bond himself, his time is up in our culture? Do we need to, it already said in the back, James Bond will return. We know that there's going to be Bond films for the next 50 years as well. But do you think that Bond as a character is no longer necessary?
I'm going to jump right on that. I'm going to say, I think he's always going to be necessary. I mean, and we talked to reference it a little earlier that the films themselves have always been a reflection of the times. So the character is just a reflection of that time. And even speaking in a realistic sense, there's always going to be a need for that blunt instrument, whether we want to admit it or not. Governments are going to need something like James Bond to kind of deal with problems that come around. I mean, they might not be as big as hidden bases in volcanoes. They might be a little, well, not simpler, but they might be a little more realistic than that. But I think Bond's going to be around for easily another 20 years with all kinds of other films and more modernized villains, maybe less pompous and dramatic or melodramatic. But yeah, I think he's here to stay. He's going to adapt to the times again.
No, I wholeheartedly agree. And I mean, this is something just to throw out there, but because obviously in No Time to Die, we had the arc of him not being 007 anymore and him having to deal with that and the back and forth between him and Lashana Lynch. And then towards at the end, it's like, I'd like Commander Bond to be reinstated as, you know, 007. It's kind of an acknowledgement that, you know, Bond made 007. 007 didn't make Bond. The name of Bond carries just as much weight as 007.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things where it's like, I could see this franchise moving forward, even sort of in the current timeline, and them just handing out a code name of James Bond or something. Or like, there's so many different ways they could be going with this. I don't think that a straight reboot is even necessary on this, the way they kind of ended it, because it elevates Bond, the name of Bond, to that 007 status. You could put Bond on anybody and they could sort of redefine what it means to be Bond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Tom, it looked like, were you going to say something?
I wasn't. I was actually hoping you would skip over me on this one, because I'm not sure how I feel about this. I think as a character, as we're used to Bond, his time is up. But I think as the transformations we watched, there's always room for him. I'm going back to something Tim said about the villains in Bond, which are to me as identifiable as Bond himself. I think the Bonds I prefer are the ones with really high arced villains. I love the big bad guys who push buttons and the plane opens up to the guy who says, I'm out of this here. You know, fine, you can leave. And then they open up the trap door and he falls out of a plane, or he gets tossed into sharks. I love the Bond that Dr. what's his name in the Mike Myers films?
Dr. Evil.
That's such a hard name to remember, isn't it? Dr. Evil does it all the time, you know, kills off his minions. I miss that about the villains. So that doesn't answer the question about whether Bond should exist or not, but there is an essence of Bond that I would miss. And I wouldn't mind if it went back to silly Bond, at least as far as the villains go. I don't know. I think my daughter's reaction that I told you about earlier really resonated with me. And so my love of Bond really took a dive for a little while. And I couldn't get her to see the Craig ones. I just cannot get her to go. And I even though I know she would appreciate them more. That doesn't answer anyone's question, but ramble of which I went with.
But, you know, I think it goes back to just how they wrote Craig and they wrote Bond over these five movies and gave him these moments of evolution. because I mean, I'm like, I think on this and I wonder, like, had this been anybody other than Craig, had this been written sort of in a very sort of different fashion, this could have just been another silly action franchise. They could have gone the Moore route or the Brosnan route and just been very sort of superficial with it. But I mean, I think the evolution of Bond happened at the first one, because I mean, I think we can all say in 05, oh, should we have any more Bond movies? Well, they were fun, but and we can all just sort of move on from them. I think the Craig arc has really sort of rejuvenated the idea of what Bond can be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I like your point there, Dave. Sorry, Tim, were you going to say something?
No, I totally agreed, and my brain was kind of pinwheeling and thinking about all these kind of grounding of the dramatic character of Bond and how they've actually tried it a few times over the course of the series, but it's never paid off. I mean, I still contend that on Her Majesty's Secret Service could have been Connery's best if he had done it, because of the whole dramatic art to it. Moore's For Your Eyes Only was, there were no gadgets.
Yeah.
It's a straightforward thriller. Living Daylights with Dalton, not to mention License to Kill, which took the, you know, the whole format into a different genre altogether as a revenge film. Goldeneye could have been a whole launch for Brosnan to be a much more serious Bond, but the producers, you know, Wilson and Broccoli kind of said, maybe not, let's just play it safe. So I think the series has been building to Daniel Craig's Bond. And now Lord knows where we can go, because the whole world is kind of opened up for us. Like Dave said, I mean, maybe somebody gets assigned James Bond as a project title or a name, and 007 is just a number. So there could be a whole chain of 007 films. You don't need the James Bond name. You just need the 007. So, yeah. I love it.
Even Die Another Day, which ended up being so silly. Just, I mean, the beginning, it's like, oh, he's been in a Korean prison for a year and he's pissed.
Right.
You know, but then they just go with space, you know, space lasers and diamonds and all that other nonsense, you know?
And ice chases. And
right, yeah.
And invisible cars.
Right.
But I like what you guys are saying. You know, it's funny. I've been thinking about this question a lot in regard, especially in regards to this film. And I really think that what we're seeing now culture-wide, just, let's separate from Bond for a minute, is the fact that we're willing to reevaluate and reinvent our icons. You know, there's been all this talk in recent years about, does Bond have to be a straight white male? Quite frankly. Although it was interesting. Craig had an interesting comment, which I thought was quite interesting, quite good, actually. He said, Bond can be anybody, still needs to be a male. If you want to create a female character to be that lead, create a new one, which I thought was an interesting take, like Lashana Lynch in this one, could lead her own franchise. Absolutely could lead her own franchise. But she doesn't have to be James Bond. She can be, like you said, this 007 or the separate icon. But I think what we're seeing larger than this is now we're willing, because culture has shifted, you've got this tension of, well, Bond has always been around, so we want to keep that brand. What does that brand look like in a world that's completely different than it was 3 years ago, 5 years ago? And I mean, even I think it's the Batwoman franchise. They cast a Bruce Wayne. My understanding is there Bruce Wayne. I have not seen it. I haven't, because I don't have CW. I don't get to see very much. But I think the Bruce Wayne they cast is an Asian male. And it's sort of like Batman is the American Bond in so many ways, right? He's the American James Bond casting type. But those sort of cultural pinnings that we associated with the character are now up for all sorts of incredible conversations, which I think is so wonderful. So I think Bond, I can see Bond continuing on if they continue that approach. When they tried to force it back into the old mold, in that, like I said, even Inspector, he's trying to tell more, like they let him tell a couple of jokes in this one, but they even make fun of the fact that he's not good at telling jokes in this one. You know, what's the worst thing about me? Is it my sense of humor? You know, they throw that in there in this particular film. It didn't work, because I felt like they were trying to fit into an old mold when they did that. But when they released that, James Bond can be anyone, could be Idris Elba, can be anybody. I think the name can go on if you continue to evolve it and the world around him, like you see in this film.
Well, I mean, I think that goes back to something, because I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, boys, but I mean, on this one, it did say James Bond will return, not 007.
It did indeed. Return. Yeah. Yeah,
but on some movies, they have said 007 will return. Have they? Or has it always been James Bond?
No, it's traditionally James Bond
will return. Okay, all right. Because it just made me, like, it was the focus more, especially in this film, on James Bond, not sort of the structure of the spy game and 007 and this, that, and the other, and MI6 or MI5 or whatever it is. Just literally the person. It was about him coming back to do the right thing, because he knew it was the right thing, telling off M because it was the right thing, because M was being a, you know, ponce, you know, and it was just all this stuff that he did because he evolved the character past the 007 moniker, which I think was the important pull away from this one, and especially as they try to come up with new ideas going forward.
No, I like that. And you make a good point, especially regarding the moniker, because you throw out the name 007 and James Bond, and you think, you know, you think of those poses, you think of standing there in the tux. But I mean, if you look at Daniel Craig's Bond, he doesn't wear a tux very often. He's very much gotten away from that image. It's a more rough and tumble image. So yeah, I love it. Good point.
I mean, there's even other movies that have sort of broken away from sort of the image that we expect out of some of these movies. I mean, with something like Black Widow, where Florence Pugh was making fun of Scarlett Johansson and her poses every time, you know? We've deconstructed the myth of the quote-unquote super spy and made these characters a lot more human over the years.
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
Well, what do we look for in a hero then, guys, since we're having this conversation? What do we look for in a hero per se?
I found that Bond was most heroic in Skyfall, because that, for me, was when he was at his most vulnerable, going back to his childhood and actually acknowledging that you are affected by the traumas of your childhood. That's something typical heroes don't go there. They don't, Batman did, but he became a man who shut down his past, right? That became his dark secret. That's what made the night dark in that case. Where Bond, he had to actually travel back to this. So I think the vulnerability that, and acknowledging things that sound kind of too ethereal to be real, like the inner child, the trauma, and things like that, and that they affect you as an adult, is really what I look for in a hero. And it is always the tipping point for me if they can successfully mine that little field. As opposed to the cold as ice, I don't give a, I mean, I admire that. I just could never relate. I can never relate to Dirty Harry. I thought he was cool back in the day before I knew he was a Republican, but I thought it was cool back then to be that cold and distant. And how do you manage that? And I could never manage it. But when you do see someone that's relatable, that is weak occasionally, does make mistakes. I know I sound like somebody's mother telling you, or your school teacher, but that's what I find to be strengths in heroes.
Well, I want to slide on the coattails of that one and add to it. I love the fact that and for heroes in my case, I also look for the idea of, you know, self-sacrifice to the point, you know you have to do the thing. Well, in this case, James Bond gives up everything to do the right thing, to save the world. Like that whole idea of sacrificing oneself for a greater good has always appealed to me in a heroic sense. I love that idea. So I guess that's why I kind of love all of the films, because he's doing everything he does for the greater good. But this one really rang true for me because, you know, of that self-sacrifice that he does in the end. You know, he can't go back to the girl. He can't get off the island. But he's going to do the job, damn it.
Do you know what I really wanted, though, at that end scene? And I wanted them to, when the woman says, but James, surely they'll find a cure or whatever. And I wanted him to go, oh, damn, you're right. And then go, well, too late now. But, oops.
Well, and to kind of throw back to the literary Bond again, at the end of You Only Live Twice, Bond is actually left for dead after his encounter on the island. And then he pops up in the next novel, like 5 years later in the literary chronology, and he's been brainwashed and, you know, they have to deprogram him. So who knows where they can go from here? I mean, it won't be Craig, but maybe that's a way back in. Who knows?
And I mean, and what's less painful, mourning a loss or him being locked up in a lab for God knows long and Léa Seydoux and the kid,
right?
Do I have anything to do with him? Like, it is the ultimate act of self-sacrifice. Like,
yeah,
he sacrifices himself out of love.
Yeah.
Out of real and love.
And that is like one of the only times it's ever, I've even gotten misty-eyed in a James Bond movie. I'm like, you knew what he was doing. And you're like, holy crap, man, that takes some balls.
Yeah, it's interesting. In when I look at Craig's Bond compared to the others and those climactic moments, the second half, even, you know, forget the climactic, the second half of the film, I would say the second half of the film is the closest I've seen to, I guess in Skyfall too, but over the last couple of films, and especially in the second half, you see Bond really grappling with his soul. And when you compare that to the blunt instrument in the first film, you know, it's, he's like a bulldozer. And this one, by the end of this film, he's sitting in that. He's making decisions. I mean, we've seen him have, here's a question. Have we heard him say, I love you before? Have we heard him say that?
Did he say it in Majesty's Secret Service to Diana Rigg?
I believe he does.
But at a graveside.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there, I'm now running the film in my head. Skip ahead.
We'll get back to you.
Yeah. All right.
No, but in all seriousness, like how many, we hear characters say, I love you in films all the time. You know, I kind of wish that he said, I loved you. And she said, I know. But, you know, like, but for Bond, those words carried real weight. Like real weight in this particular film in a way that we hadn't seen before. Like there's, you're absolutely right, Tom. In Skyfall, he starts to go back and deal with the traumas of his past. I'm going to skip Spectre. because I think they tried that in Spectre and it just doesn't work. It does not land. But in this film, not only is he dealing with his past and he's talking about how he doesn't trust anybody and how he has issues with trust. Rightfully so, because, you know, we
also saw Casino Royale. So
yeah, I know. And I mean, for crying out loud, he had a gravesite blow up in his face in this one. But I mean, all these issues of trust, and there's something about him that becomes whole at the end of this film. And it's not, you know, you talk about doing things for the greater good. I think that means so many different things to so many different people. And I think Connery and Goldfinger is doing things for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one, the greater good is dealing with people individually. It's not just save the world. It's saving, like realizing the specific people that really matter.
And, well, for sure. Because he was doing it to save Madeline and the kid. I mean, everybody else is a bonus, but those are the two he has to save. Yeah.
And I mean, in any of the other movies, we never had a sense of the weight of the accumulation of all the other events that he's experienced in his life. Here we did. Yes. And that's what made it more important, that much more poignant.
Yeah, yeah. This, you know, I think when we talked about it a little bit before, but the fact that they brought continuity into Craig's arc gives weight to this moment.
Yeah, totally.
Had he just died, and it was like so many of the other films, even the Brosnan films, which were trying at some loose thread, but really it just one-offs, if he just died at the end of it, it wouldn't land the same way. It wouldn't land the same way. Tim, did you make it through on Her Majesty's Secret Service?
I did. And all I can remember is it's not New Year yet. And there's a big smooch. But no, he doesn't actually say he, because at the wedding, there's the kiss. But again, then they go off and have their own conversations. And then they're in the car. So no, he never actually gets to say it. Instead, you know, he says we have all the time in the world, which I guess in James Bond's vernacular, much like as you wish, means I love you.
Anyway, well, guys, okay. I mean, we're starting to run out of time. Just real quick, before we screen it or skip it, I would love to know, what do you do next? What is Bond 26? I mean, obviously, we're recasting. Do you straight up reboot? Do you go full Casino Royale? Do you continue the arc? What do you do?
Wow.
Both.
Well, you could do both, can you?
Yeah, you both? Think about it. If you, what do you do? Turn left or right? You do both.
M from Brosnan to
True.
Craig, you continue the through lines and have a new person be James Bond.
Oh, and that was
have it be his designate, have it be his
right
call sign or something, and even still have Lashana Lynch as 007 and Naomi Harris, who is consistently underrated in these things, as Moneypenny.
Oh, totally.
The whole nine yards, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, Ben, thank you for mentioning the whole M and the continuity thing, Dave, because there's that scene where Bond is talking to M, and then there's the paintings of all the other M's around them. Like, they're all there. So there's obviously a form of continuity in the series, even if it's just little winks and nods to the audience who have been with the series. But yeah, you can totally find some way to tie it into the continuity and reboot it, because they've been doing it for what, since 62?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my understanding of a reboot is none of the films prior to it mattered. So that's not exactly a reboot, Dave, I don't think, what you're suggesting.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Reimagining.
No, I mean, my I think the next James Bond just walked behind you, Tim.
I'll tell her that.
Jane Bond, whatever.
Or he might be there right now.
It's yeah. Oh, there it is. There's the next James Bond.
I mean, this guy right here.
Yeah, yeah.
His name is George.
I'm up to no good.
George. Well, what I was thinking about when Craig's comment about Bond has to be male. I mean, listening to you explain that, it makes sense to me, and I'm liable to go, okay, yeah, he's correct. But my initial thought about the next Bond and where we go next is that it perhaps it was a bit arrogant of me, but I say Bond is a fictional character, so Bond can be any shade of she, him, or they, as anybody wants. I mean, you could change the name. I wouldn't flinch at any new Bond, whether regardless of who they are. Wouldn't it be great? Pardon?
I think that's why they split 007 and James Bond.
Yeah.
I think that's why we have these two very distinct visions of what 007 is. And what James Bond is now.
Well, I love the idea that we can have these conversations about a character that has been known a certain way for 50 years and say, yeah, why not?
That's
really neat. It's interesting. I've wrestled with myself again. What do we do? What do they do next? I think they've got themselves in an interesting corner. I think they have to go straight up reboot. They may just keep some of the same cast. But I think you almost have to, like they did that with Craig, because they kept Judi Dench from the Brosnan years, but they made him a new Bond. They started with a straight up reboot, but they kept the character. I think they have to go that route. If like I thought to myself, well, does Bond get plastic surgery, and he shows up? If they do that, they have to keep the story arc with Madeline Swan. They have to keep the super blood. They have to keep the, I have a child, but I never see them. He's now a deadbeat dad. You know, they have to, all of these things now are affected by not just straight up rebooting him.
But here's the thing. Throughout any of the films, do we ever know that his name, like, until Skyfall, when we see he has his parents, we never get a sense of it being anything more than sort of a designate, like a name. We understand in Skyfall that in this arc, okay, James Bond was a person. Mm-hmm. I think you can continue on. And I mean, I think they honor that Bond by making Bond sort of a new designate, which really you could apply to the Brosnan, Dalton, Moore, Lazenby, Connery things, because we never got a sense of their characters sort of past and who they were as people. I think this is the mark where you get a chance to sort of reinvent the line of there being a Bond and there being a 007.
Yes.
I mean, well, and I there's think a Bond has to be a man, but 007?
Well, there's a precedent for that already in the series, because we've seen it that that M, you know, is apparently not just a designate, but has also been the name of M's actual character.
Right. Like,
there's been Miles. There's been, you know, whatever Judi Dench's M's name was. So it's not, and Ralph Fiennes' M is also an M name. So it's, there's a precedent for it. So maybe you're right, Dave. Maybe that's the way to go.
So was the additional roles of Q and M and a Moneypenny in this episode, the way they had more business to do, a sort of, okay, you get your time to shine because you're not going to be back, or were they setting up for bigger roles in future Bond movies?
See, I think it's setting up for bigger roles going down the line, be it a 007 movie or be it a Bond movie. Like, I would not be shocked if they try to do a Bond movie and they try to do a 007 movie in some
That's
way,
interesting,
shape, or form.
Yeah.
There is a precedent for that, because Die Another Day, the intent was to spin off into a Jinx franchise.
Yeah.
With Halle Berry, and it never came to, because people hated Jinx. But that was the intent.
Why do we always, why am I always the last one to find out we hate people? I thought we liked Jinx. I want to say also that it's sort of a roundabout way, but Tim mentioned does Bond get a plastic surgery? And in the last, thank God it was the last Pink Panther movie, he runs into James Bond, Roger Moore, and finds out it's Lieutenant Caluso who had plastic surgery to look like James Bond. Which was the only funny part in the movie, because James Bond was doing all Lieutenant Caluso stuff. But anyway, around about plastic surgery, James Bond story.
Love it. There it is. Well, guys, this has been fun. This has been a lot of fun.
This has been great.
I could keep going. I just was worried about time, but we should screen it or skip it. No Time to Die, screen it or skip it.
Screen it.
Totally screen it.
Absolutely screen it.
Well, that's a unanimous one. I'll say screen it on this one as well. I think this one, now it's interesting, because I don't think it's going to win over any people who are lukewarm to Bond. So I should say that. If you're a lukewarm Bond fan and you're like, I don't really care. Although there's more into it, but I mean,
Tom's daughter is not going to give a damn about this.
Shut in.
She is. But she finally sits down to watch that. She's going to go, that's what Bond should be like. She has never seen a Daniel Craig Bond. By the way, before you go, I knew personally a Bond villain as a child.
Yes. Please tell the story.
Yes. Yes. His name, what's his character's name? Gustav Graves, from, is it Die Another Day? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was his camp counselor when he was an 8-year-old camper.
That's awesome.
And so did you notice any of these tendencies early on?
He's Maggie Smith's, Toby Stevens is his name, Maggie Smith's son. And yeah, I was his camp counselor.
So he's Maggie Smith's son. I didn't realize that.
Yes. Toby Stevens is. Yeah. Robert Stevens, the director who did, he didn't direct prime of his Gene Brody. He starred as the school teacher, and that's where Maggie and Robert Stevens met, had two kids. Toby was one of them. Yeah.
On Screenfish Radio, you learn something new every day, boys.
Right? I did not know that one. That's awesome.
Neither did I.
Wait, I have to ask this to Tom. Where?
Like, it's in just outside of Kitchener-Waterloo. So Maggie was doing a performance at Stratford, and she needed to send her kids to summer camp. And I was working at a camp out of, it's a Kitchener-Waterloo Y camp, and it was called Camp Kawawai, KI-WA Kitchener-Waterloo-Y.
No, honestly, guys, this has been so much fun. I really, really appreciate the guys you taking the time to chat with the film with me. Now is the chance where you guys get to plug. Let's hear what I mentioned it before at the beginning, but let's hear what you got going on. Tim, now tell us about the Mind Reels.
Oh man, we just celebrated our 10th anniversary. We've been writing for 10 years.
That's right. Yeah.
This week I will hit post number 5,000. But yeah, we just kind of cover film, television. I'm now hip deep in Toronto After Dark this year, which I love. And I'm working my way through a whole bunch of classic TV series, which is why I knew Jamie Farr was cleaner, because I'm watching MASH on the weekends. Yeah, I'm just digging into anything I can find right now and just watching everything. And I get to write for Dave sometimes.
That's awesome. When you're not that busy, right?
You've got so much free time, as we can
see. Right.
Wow. Okay, Tom, what about you?
Well, I'm currently writing for Original Sin and also Another Place. David?
Northern Stars.
Northern Stars. NorthernStars.ca. Also have a podcast called Rewind Fast Forward. If you happen to be at the Ukrainian Film Festival this year, you will see me introducing a few films for the Ukrainian Film Festival. And I'm hosting the Toronto Arts Film Festival at the end of this month.
That's right.
Cool. Yeah. That's great. That's exciting.
Yeah, it is fun. That's me.
Great. And well, David?
Well, as you said at the beginning, I am the czar and the impresario. I am the boss over at InTheSeats.ca, where we cover film, television, basically the moving image at large with our crack staff, which you, Steve, and Tim, I'm very thankful that you take part in over there with us. And also, I am the host and genial producer of In The Seats With, where we sit down with a wide range and variety of industry professionals and pick their brain about current projects, state of the industry, and so very much more in a light and conversational fashion. And you can find us on all podcast services on that front as well. And that's about it. And like you said, like all the free time we all have, really,
That's fair. No, honestly, I know you guys are all really busy, and I'm so glad that you could join us and have some fun with this. For you at home, a reminder, you can find us wherever podcasts are available. And on YouTube, as we continue this wild and wacky experiment of video content, if you will. If you go to the podcast page on screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, some questions to help you get the conversation about this film where you are. And we will be back next week. But I think we're talking about The Eyes of Tammy Faye, but I'm not going to say
that. Credit roll, but he will be back.
I will be. Yeah. Steve Norton will return. We're really excited for that. And guys, just again, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.